and maybe add a little more. So we mentioned that yesterday we saw the Gemara Masechta Shabbos Daf Tov Gimel Amud Aleph, where the Gemara tells us that Yishov Vaday Madlika, that a woman definitely can light the Chanukah candle or does light the Chanukah candle. Sha'afin Hoyu Bosa Hanes. And we started to explore a couple of questions. One question we didn't really spend any time on, just to make a quick reference to now, is first of all, what does Afin Hoyu Bosa Hanes mean? What do the words mean? And there you find a couple of possibilities, right? What might they mean?
That they were, they helped in the miracle.
Oh, okay. So that's probably what comes to mind first, right? Which is not what Rashi over here says. But you would think that it's a reference to that the nace happened through them, right? Which is something that you could say with all of the Pashtun and Nisa situations. When it comes to Purim, it's easiest to say because we have the whole Megillah that is literally all Megillah named after the heroic woman. But when it comes to Hanukkah also, so we have a heroic woman, as Morty can tell you, named Yehudis. Although there is some debate about whether her episode really took place during the Hanukkah story, which certainly would complicate things, but it's usually assumed that the story of Yehudis, who intoxicated a general and then decapitated, that took place within the context of the Hanukkah story. And therefore, women were a major part of that miracle. So that's a possibility. But what does Rashi over here say? Rashi and Shabbos, you don't have Shabbos in front of you, probably. But Rashi over here says, you saw it yesterday, that what?
That there was a gzeira on the
besulos. So therefore, it's also a kedushin topic again, right? Kol besulos and nisos liyboil etafset chila b'leidei isha nasanei. So Rashi really says both, right? So Rashi is 2 days. So first, that there was this gzeira that there should be a relationship with the tafset first. It's interesting that I see, I don't know if this is only the fancy ones, but I have in front of me Masoros Hashas and Hosafos. So there, it says, Ayin Ksubis Gimel Medbeis. So there is a Gemara. If you learn at the beginning of Masechus Ksubis about Tibol Lehegmon Tchila, the Gemara there is not talking about the Hanukkah specifically, or in any way that we necessarily know that it is, but that's interesting, that type of reference. So here again, the Masar Sashas, it says, I am the Gilas Tainus, Paraglav, I am Baran, Maisa Yehudis, Muhu Barama. So here the assumption that we're talking about Yehudis is the second possibility in Rashi. Yes, sir?
Rashi by Miguel doesn't mention that.
Right. So that's also interesting. Right. Where does Rashi say Megillah? Afein Hayu. Sorry. Also Shmat. Also Sakana. Also Sakana. They also were subject to the same danger. So it's interesting just to reflect what that means. You know. So basically, is this a recognition of? I don't know. This might be a little bit drushy. The question of whether this yields any insight as to the mechanics of Afen Hayubo Oso Hanes. So we started to talk about yesterday, does Afen Hayubo Oso Hanes mean that a p'tur that could have kicked in does not kick in? And instead, the original obligation applies more broadly? Or is it kind of a new chiyuv that is created in spite of a p'tur, that there is a p'tur, which is mitzvah seishah, zman grano, or whatever it is, and this comes and creates a new chiyuv. So you could say somewhat roughly, again, I don't know if this is the most straightforward pshat, but that if you want to say that afen hayuv also hasakana, that they were under the same threat, so then you could say it's really about the original chiyuv not being taken off, because here we're saying, okay, we have a mitzvah to show gratitude for Yeshua. So say, how could you exclude people who also went through this Yeshua, who also had this sakana and were able to be saved? So they're also going to have to express gratitude. While if you want to say that it's about that a woman was the hero, It seems like that's really a separate kind of thing. Like, what's the idea of, okay, because a woman was a hero, so therefore we should make them chayavos in the mitzvah? Doesn't really line up. Sounds more like we're saying that, okay, for whatever reason women are heroes, but in honor of the fact that we were saved by women, so we also create a new shlav, so to speak, for women also. Again, I don't know if that's a perfect svara, but maybe that lines up a little bit. I should also mention, didn't get to mention this yesterday either, that we are not yet holding a mitzvah seisha on Brahma. It is on our radar screen very much. But once we get there, we'll discuss the fact that there is a machlokas rishonim as to whether that p'tur applies to mitzvahs d'rabbanan. Sounds like from Rashi and Brachos that it does not apply to mitzvahs d'rabbanan, in which case then we have to figure out why should women not be obligated in the chiyuvim that we're talking about, which are generally d'rabbanan. No.
What's the nature of mitzvah asterisks on grandma as a principle? Because I know the Gemara is like fuzzy.
So that's, again, we hope to spend a lot of time on that. So I don't, as much as it's clearly relevant here, but because of time considerations and the efficiency rule of time assignments, since it is a sugi on our horizon, I'm going to leave a longer discussion for that. For now, we don't know exactly. There's too many pratim that have to be examined for that. So let's just assume that there is a reason to exclude women from some type of basis, and then Afhain either stops that from happening or creates a nuchi. Okay, so that much we have from the Gemara. So the question was, how do you understand Isha Vaday Madlika? So it sounds like it's saying, just like a man lights, a woman lights also, and no limitations. And that's the way probably most read this line. And as we noted yesterday, that it's especially true if you back up one line earlier and you see that it's kind of being contrasted. It sounds like it's being contrasted to the line before it, where there we're told that a cheresh, a shot, and a cotton, if they light, it's nothing. So it sounds like that is the difference, that not only can Misha light on her own behalf, but she can light for the whole household, because it's being contrasted with Cheresh, Shota, and Katan, at least She'ena, Megiel, Chinuch, that an Isha for sure can light. So a simple reading of the Gemara, the way probably the vast majority understand it, is that women are obligated the same way men are obligated, and women can light on behalf of the household the same way a man can light on behalf of the household. So far, so good. But we explored two distinctions yesterday. So one question is that in the case of Megillah, as we started to explain, so there as well, the Gemara in Megillah and the Gemara in Erechim tells us that women are chayavos in Megillah. And the impression one would get is there also that women are chayavos the same way as men. And therefore, you could have a woman read the Megillah on behalf of men. And that was the view of some of the Rishonim, some big Rishonim, such as Rashi and the Rambam. But the very notable dissent is the Bahag. We mentioned yesterday how the Bahag is very revered by other Rishonim, and therefore, even when he's a minari, he tends to get a lot of deference. So here, Shulchan Aruch defers to this position as well, and says that, yes, the woman is chayeves, but she cannot read for men. And we started to give some explanations of that, and we'll recap that in a second. So our question for our sugya can be asked in two ways. One is, if there is no such distinction when it comes to Hanukkah, then why is Hanukkah different than Purim? Okay, that's one type of question we could ask. Then, the opposite question we could ask is, if there is a distinction within Hanukkah also, what's that distinction about? So just to keep us oriented, first we want to know the difference between Hanukkah and Purim. We'll assume that there is one. And then, let's say, if there is no difference, so then why is there this internal distinction in terms of how the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is carried out. Okay, it's a little bit confusing, but it sounds manageable. So first, let's talk about, is there a difference between Chanukah and Purim? If you say Purim, we have this distinction. And Chanukah, what's the story? So as we mentioned, most of the sources don't relate to any type of distinction within Chanukah. What are the possible exceptions? So the Meiri quotes a minority opinion that a woman cannot light on behalf of the household. The Rambam is not explicit. The Rambam basically just leaves out this whole line. The Hagos Maimini, if you saw that, adds in the line that Isha Madlika. But there are others who are bothered by the Rambam leaving this out, and there's some speculation that maybe the Rambam also doesn't think that a woman can light on behalf of the whole household, but it's not really explicit one way or another. The Rav Yah, I know at least some of you saw the Rav Yah, I saw the Rav Yah, raises the question based on the Bahag, that the Bahag says what he says, Lagabe Purim, so what's the story for Chanukah? Does he make such a distinction or not? And the Rav Yah raises this issue and tries to figure that out. So it's an open question whether the distinction exists on the Chanukah side of the equation. But halacha l'maisa, the majority of you clearly seems to be that there is no such distinction. And when it comes to Purim, we do make a distinction. So what's the difference between Chanukah and Purim? Why would we say Chanukah, she's in for the whole deal, and Purim, she's not in for the whole deal?
Maybe because in the description of Akin compared to Purim, women are more either involved or had more of a sakana than men. Mm-hmm. So by Chanukah, you had the extra thing of like pre-menachta with the generals.
Uh-huh.
With Purim, they were just grouped in with the men. They had the same chiyuv as the men, but Chanukah they had even more, or had it worse even than the men. They also had the added rape and stuff like that. And
so are you making a qualitative distinction, a quantitative distinction?
I think qualitative.
So how does that add up? Like, how does that correlate to the...
That for some reason may have to do with how Akane works about how maybe how women shouldn't, like how we get... that really they shouldn't be high, but then they are, that if they're just equal to men, then if they're just equal to men in the sakana, then when we're letting them be part of the mitzvah, when we're letting them be part of the chiyuv, they're going to be on a lower level, because even though they're on, because we're bringing them up. But once they're a step above the men, they become equal. They almost become equal in their chiyuv.
That's elaborate. Okay, so let's see if that matches up with anything that we can find. Any other suggestions?
Magen Avraham.
So what does Magen Avraham say?
About how the mitzvah of Purim is qualitatively different than the mitzvah of Hanukkah.
Okay.
And it's an issue. For Purim, it's an issue of Kriya Torah and Pavlov.
Okay, so that's one possibility, right? It could be that it just has to do with the nature of what's happening. That we know that when it comes to laying in public, so the Mishnah, the Gemara says in Megillah that that's a problem, that there's a kavod tzibur issue for women to wane. So maybe it's just the nature of what happens in the mitzvah, nothing to do with the history, nothing to do with what Chazal were ordaining as far as how it's supposed to evoke the mitzvah. But simply, one involves laying in public, and one doesn't. So the one that involves laying in public, that's where we have this issue, and the other one not. So if you make a distinction like that, which could work, but it's also interesting when you want to think about the Purim issue. Sounds like the satire copy of the commentator. You want to think about the Purim issue, so you have to factor in that the language we find associated with the Bahag, and it's a little bit murky because the Bahag is quoted different ways in different sources, But the assumption is there's a difference between Mikra Megillah, and that's what men are obligated in, and Shmias Megillah. Now, those terms we basically started to map out yesterday. There's three possibilities. Either those terms are literal and just refer to real-life distinctions, or they are somehow halachic lumdisha terms, or they are kind of after-the-fact terms and they don't really have any conceptual connection. What I mean is, let's say, to go with what Jeremy just said, it's not that there's any reason to say women are chayavos in shmia and men are chayavos in mikra because of any factor. It's just that, practically speaking, the women are not going to be laying in the Megillah, so therefore we're going to call what they do shmias and Megillah. And practically speaking, the men will be laying in the Megillah, at least one of them, so we'll call that mikra Megillah. But there's no deeper significance to distinguishing between mikra and shmia. Hi.
The third approach is based on Yerushalmi, Bar Kachra.
Which Yerushalmi?
Yerushalmi Bar Kachra.
How does that play out?
Isn't that the one where he says that we're supposed to read it before them?
So the idea that the third approach, meaning that it's simply that kind of, I hear what you're saying, right? So that the other way to say it is that the idea specifically is that the Mikra Megillah applies to men, but Shmias Megillah includes women, and that's like the Salvation we mentioned yesterday said to explain the Medrash Nelam that the Magen Avraham quotes, that the mitzvah is really on the men to read, but the audience, because presuming Nisa, the audience should involve women. So one distinction, like you mentioned, could be practical. What other distinctions could possibly be there? How else could we distinguish between the nature of the mitzvah? Another distinction you could say is suggested by the Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi, if you're familiar with Tzvi Ashkenazi, was the father of Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So he writes in his Shuvos in Siman Yud Gimel, there's also, again, a different structural difference in the mitzvah. And that it has to do with the idea that Chanukah is mitzvah habayis. That there is a mitzvah on the household to light Chanukah candles. While Megillah is really an individual mitzvah, and the way we fulfill it as individuals is through Shomei Ka'onah. So therefore, for Shomei Ka'onah to work, right, what kind of role does the active party have to fulfill? So if the issue is Shomei Ka'onah, the active party is the one reading the Megillah, so he has to fulfill the role of somebody who's fully mechuyu at the maximal level so he can include everybody in the audience. But when it comes to Ner Chanukah, it's not Shomei Ka'onah. It's that the household has to have a Ner. So the household could have a Ner that could be lit by anyone who is shayach in the mitzvah and shayach to the household. So the Isha fulfills that standard, as does, let's say, a Kohen Shigi Elchina would also fulfill that standard. So that's another distinction that could be made between the two. And a third distinction, this one is one we started to say yesterday, but I'm moving it around now to just set the stage a little differently, that maybe it has to do with Afen Hayubos or Neis being a separate Machayev. Right, this we started to explain yesterday. That if you want to say that Purim is actually a higher level of obligation than Chanukah, because Purim is what we call, what we discussed yesterday,
Kabbalah.
Divrei Kabbalah, right? It comes from the Nevi'im, because it's Psukim and Megillas Esther. So therefore, Mikra Megillah is an obligation to Divrei Kabbalah. And Afhein Hayu Ba'oso Anes, if that's a new Machayev, so that is a Drabbanan. So a Drabbanan is not on the same level as Divrei Kabbalah. So therefore, women can't read for men simply because it's a different level of obligation. But when it comes to Hanukkah, so perhaps we have no such distinction. Because Hanukkah is all the Rabbanan across the board. You follow the distinction? So within Purim, it's a Divrei Kabbalah, the Rabbanan difference. And Hanukkah, everything is the Rabbanan, so no reason to make a distinction. Okay, so those are three reasons you could distinguish between Hanukkah and Purim. Okay, say Purim, we're going to have a split, while Hanukkah, there's no such split. So that's stage one. But now let's reorient ourselves differently and say, what's the possible reasons to distinguish if you do have the distinction within Hanukkah? So now let's make Hanukkah and Purim the same and assume that there's a two-level obligation in both sides. That women are obligated in Megillah but don't lain for the tzibur, and women are obligated in Ner Hanukkah but don't light for the household. Why should there be such a distinction? So I started to explain to you yesterday, if you want to look towards Purim. So when it comes to Purim, so there, one explanation of the difference is what we just said is the Turi Emet. We started to say yesterday there's a whole other school of thought where many different versions exist, all following a certain formula. And this formula assumes that there are two parts to the obligation of Megillah. There is X, because there's different versions, so we'll call it the X factor. There is X, and there is Pirsumei Nisan. And Afen Hoyu Boso Hanes only attaches to a Pirsumei Nisan, but not to the main mitzvah of Megillah. So women are obligated in Pirsumei Nisan, but they're not obligated in Mikra Megillah. Because Mikra Megillah has some component that women are patures from. So there are at least, let's say, three different versions in the Achronim of what X is. Anyone want to take some guesses? Now, keep in mind, X is going to be something that's related to Mikra Megillah, but women, for some reason, would be Peturos from. Anyone want to take a guess what it might be? Sorry?
Hallel.
So some Achronim say Hallel. Right? The assumption is women are Peturos from Hallel, although that's a complex assumption. That's also the whole sugya in Hanukkah. It's really the sugya of Nashim and Hallel, and Hanukkah is a whole separate sugya, which I didn't know if that was included in your initial request, but I'm worried that that should be discussed also. It's a whole separate topic. But that's how Sabbath-Luthior Sameach explains that Mikra Megillah is made up of Hallel plus Pirsumei Nisan. That's the recipe for a Mikra Megillah. So, therefore, women are Peturos from Hallel. It's the general assumption. Again, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but that's the general assumption. So, if we say women are Chayavos in Megillah, we have to subtract the Hallel part, and they're only Chayavos in Pirsumei Nisan. Okay? Follow? Question about that? Yeah?
Oh, no, no.
So, where the idea that Megillah is got a component of Hallel in it, you know where that comes from? It's a Gemara in Megillah, and Daf Yudale. It's actually important to know because it's also relevant to understanding in Hanukkah. And it's a whole question how Chazal have the authority to add Yom Tov. We have a prohibition of Baal Tosef. We know that Chazal make gezeros to stop us from doing averos. They make additional prohibitions. But where do we get the idea that they can create new Yom Tovim with new mitzvos? So the Gemara says in Megillah and Daf Yudalet, that they found the Kal V'chomer for Pur. That since we say Hallel on Pesach, so we could say that Ma me avdus l'cheirus, when it comes to Pesach, we were saved simply from slavery, and we have a yontif for that, and we say Hallel for that. So Kal V'chomer, right? Our previous looking Kedushin is all about figuring out different Kal V'chomers. And so Kal V'chomer to being saved from death, we should say Hallel on Purim. Then there's a discussion in the Rishonim and elsewhere, is that meant to include Chanukah as well? Because we have to get Chanukah on the list. But Chanukah is a little bit better off than Purim, because Chanukah, okay, so Taka, we say Hallel on Chanukah. But on Purim, we don't say Hallel. So the Gemara has three explanations as to how to address why Hallel is not actually recited on Purim. And one of the three is Kriyasa Zuhalela, that Mikra Megillah takes the place of Hallel. And there's a often quoted position of the Meiri that if somebody is on a desert island for Purim, and doesn't have a Megillah, he should say Hallel. Because really, we should be saying Hallel on Purim, but it's included in our Mikra Megillah. But if you don't have a Mikra Megillah, then you should say Hallel. So that's one Mahalach here, that Megillah is Hallel plus Persume Nisa. Women are Peturos from Hallel, so therefore it's a different kind of thing. That's one. So there's at least two others. Anyone want to take another guess? Noah?
Mechiyah
Amalek. So Mechiyah Amalek is an interesting one. That's the one the Marcheshes decided was the key. The Marcheshes was Rav Henoch Egish, I think we've mentioned him. It was Rav of Vilna. And he assumed that that's the idea, that maybe Megillah is mixture of Persumenisa and Zechira Samalek. Zechira Samalek is completely bound up with Mechia Samalek, and women are pater from that. Now the question is, whoever said women are pater from that?
They're pater from Mechia Samalek, or
is there pater from...
Oh, whoever said either one.
Is there pater from Mechamed
Mitzvah? So that's the assumption. So the Sefer Achinuch was the one who said that women are pteros from Zechira Samalek. Which, we know, not everyone assumes, right? Nowadays in our shuls, we usually encourage the women to come to shul for Parsha Zachar and say, if you don't come to shul any other time, come this Shabbos, because the Chiras HaMalek is a chiyuv. So, it was a machlokus about this, although the question is, what's the premise of the Sefer Achinuch? So, the Sefer Achinuch has this view, and some explain that it's because the Chiras HaMalek and Mohammed HaMalek are connected, and Mohammed Samalek is only obligatory on men. Now, where does that come from? How do you know that Mohammed Samalek is only obligatory on men? I'll give you a hint. It's Chazara.
Kedushin,
Beis and the Beis, right? Darchil Shali Shleilech Mohammed. So that's really the premise there. The problem is, the Mishnah says in Sota that for Mohammed's mitzvah, like a Malek, everyone goes out of Filu Kala Nechipaso, presumably referring to women. So that's the whole discussion, what exactly that means, how to interpret that. It's a big machlokas. It's really a little bit of a shaky structure, this whole idea. But the assumption is that maybe a Malik, Melchama, Zechir, you have to build a lot of steps to get this together. You have to say that Megillah is about Zechir as a Malik, Zechir as a Malik, is about Melchama as a Malik, women are pater from Melchama as a Malik. All of these are somewhat questionable. But you put all that together, so then you could say women are not chayavos in that aspect of Megillah, and they're chayavos in Persume Nisa only. The third shita, Stipler discusses, I think Soloveitchik discussed this as well, is that maybe it has to do with the Chi of Talmud Torah. That maybe there's a Chi of Talmud Torah that's included in the Megillah, and that's what women are pteros from. So you see those last three explanations all followed a certain algebraic formula, right? That Megillah is X plus Persume Nisa. Women are only chayavos in Persume Nisa. So therefore, they're not chayavos in kriyas and megillah, and they can't be motzi men. And X could be either Talmud Torah, could be Hallel, could be Mechias Amalek, could be whatever you want to put in there. Okay, so far so good? Everyone following? Okay, but here's a step that requires a little bit more explanation. So let's grant any of those three opinions. Let's say, fine, there's X plus Krishnamenis. And let's say you're right, okay, women are Pturos from X. But why does it break down that way? Why do we say, oh, X, that's Kriyas HaMegillah. And Persumenisa, that's Shmiyas HaMegillah. Is that kind of arbitrary, just to say, okay, this half is that, and that half is this? Is there a reason to say that all those other components is what Kriyas HaMegillah constitutes? And Persumenisa, that's about Shmiyas HaMegillah. Is there a reason to say that? All right, would you like to hear an extremely long Deshavni Nezer? All right, so buckle your seatbelts. This is quite the Avni Nezer. So he says as follows. Okay, this is really quite a tiefkeit. And we will bring this back to Hanukkah. But first, this is, you have to see it in the context of Purim. The Avni Nezer explains like this. There is a question you could ask from a different, totally different area of Shas, but it relates to Purim also. The Gemara says that on the Afayin Dalet and Sanhedrin, that there are three mitzvot that are Yehari Balyahu, right? Kilei Arayis, Shechus Damim, Avodah Zarah. If somebody commands you to do one of those averos from the pain of death, you have to die, otherwise not. Then the Gemara goes on to say that any Avera, if it's Befarhesia, that is also Yehari Vayav. So the Gemara says, really? Oh, wait a minute. What about Esther? Right, Esther intermarried. And that was Befarhesia. Everyone knew about this. So why don't we say Yehari Vayav, or she shouldn't have done it. Even to save the Jewish people, she shouldn't have done it. So the Gemara has two answers. The one answer is that it only applies to things which are lahakas, you know, which are davka, to make a statement, not things that have other motives. It's called Hanoas Atzman. The king wasn't trying to make a big point about how he convinced the Jewish girl to intermarry. He was just interested in marrying her. But the other answer in the Gemara is what we're interested in now. The Gemara says that what?
Esther
Karka Olam. So what does that mean? It sounds like it means in this act of marriage to the king, she was passive. It seems to be a description of how we view the physical relationship between the male and the female, and that her role is passive. The man is doing all the activity. So therefore, it doesn't enter into this equation of Yehari Vayav. So some ask the question that that's not the way the halacha views it. The halacha says, if you have a man and a woman who together commit adultery, right, we talked about it a little bit last week, but without this distinction doesn't make any distinction. Let's say you have a man who has an affair with a married woman, right? So both of them are considered to be in full violation of the Isser of Eishes Ish. And they're both Chayiv Misa. That's the Gemara of Kama. It says that Hishlu HaKasav Ish L'Isha L'Chol Onshin Shikatara, that men and women, when they do an act of Arayas together, they're both equally liable. Unless it was a rape, of course, but if they're both willing partners, so then they're both equally liable. So isn't that a contradiction? The Gemara tells us in Bava Kama Pi Halacha, the woman is considered to be a 50-50 partner, is equally active. And here, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says the woman is passive. So So which one is it? Is she active or is she passive? You hear the question? So the Avnei Nezer says a charifus, an incredible charifus. Ready? Seatbelts totally buckled. Says the Avnei Nezer, al pi halacha, al pi din, in the Beis HaMedrash, the woman is considered to be active. That's a din, pushvu akasav ishli ish. But the Gemara in Sanhedrin is not talking about the Beis Medrash. What's the Gemara talking about? What's the question the Gemara says? Ha Esther b'farhesia hevi, right? Everyone knew what she was doing. So we're not interested in a question like that. We're not interested in the Beis Medrash. We're not interested that we would go into the Beis Medrash and say, yeah, Pidin, the Gemara b'kama, she's doing something. No, we're interested in what the world would say. Because we're talking about what's b'farhesia. The Gemara didn't say, she did an Aveira. The Gemara says she did an Aveira mefarhesed. The fact that it was public. So in the view of the public, Esther Karko, the fact that Alpilondus is different doesn't matter. And he says that based on Kesef Mishnah and Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, who says that something that's only known to Talmidei Chachamim is not considered to be known, not public knowledge. So therefore, the fact that it's lumdish is true, that doesn't make it public knowledge. Public knowledge is the reality without the lumdish.
Hi. Why did the world think that Esther is Kargola?
Because in general, they view the role of the woman in the physical relationship as passive.
Right.
The view that is passive. It's only Alpidin, you don't see it as passive. Okay, you hear that, Terrence?
You say that's a Mishnah.
Kesef Mishnah is just that anything that's known only to Talmidei Chachamim is not considered publicly known. So based on that, the Avnei Nezer says, when the Gemara wants to know, isn't Esther b'farhesia, the Gemara is not interested in the halachic status of her action. It's interested in the public perception of the action. So the public perception is that it was passive. It's only lomdus that makes it active. Okay, so far so good. Now keep your seatbelts still on. Do not stand up in the bus, says the Avnei Nezer. Now listen to this. When it comes to Pirsumei Nisa, as far as the Megillah is concerned, Pirsumei Nisa cannot be about Kriya. It can only be about Shmia. Why? Because think of it like this. If I were to ask the average Jew on the street the day after Purim, tell me, Reuven, did you read the Megillah yesterday? What will he say?
No.
No. Why? What will he say?
I heard the Megillah.
I went to shul. They had this very nice palkore. He read the Megillah. And I heard it. Now, Alpidin, is he accurate? Is he speaking correctly? No. Why not? Because Alpidin, what's the mitzvah? The mitzvah is to read the Megillah. And we have a halachic mechanism called Shomei Ka'oneh that makes it as if everyone who heard the Megillah actually read the Megillah. But the average person doesn't know that. The average person assumes the mitzvah on Purim is we go to shul and we hear the Megillah. They don't know that that's called reading the Megillah. So therefore, it says the Avnei Nezer, if we're interested in Pirsum, if we're interested in publicity, that can only come from Shmias HaMegillah. Because the public is not aware that they do Kriyas HaMegillah. They only know that they do Shmias HaMegillah. Quite the charifus. You hear it? So that's how he now plugged this back in to the formula of those other achronim who say it's X plus Pirsumei Nisa. He's giving you the explanation of why the distinction is the way it is. So Kriyas HaMegillah could be any of the different answers for X. But Shmias HaMegillah, Pirsum Hanes, only comes from Shmia, not from Kriya. Hi.
I don't really understand how that makes sense. Like,
okay,
why?
It's very, very lumdish.
Sure. Yeah, how it's lumdish, but how lumdish doesn't count.
Right, he's saying it's self-mediated.
It's like meta-aloneness.
Right, that's an interesting point. But he's saying that, if you want to say it the simplest way, he's saying you can't say that there is publicity that comes from the fact that we all read the Megillah. Because people don't know that we all read the Megillah. Everyone thinks that we all hear the Megillah. So if we're focused on what's public and what is making a public message, it's that all of us are going to hear the Megillah.
Why?
That's the simplest one sentence way to say it.
But in terms of the Gemara and Sanhedrin, why does it matter what the public viewed if we care about what Psat Beit Din is about?
Because the whole issue is the public. If it was one of the big three, right? If she was really over in Gilead Arias, or Sheikh Hasdam, or Rabbi Zara, then we wouldn't care, right? Because there's two levels in that Gemara. The Gemara is saying there's certain averos which are hard to lay out. And that wasn't an issue, apparently. We shown and discuss why wasn't Gilead Arias a big issue in Tosos. There was a big discussion in the Rishonim. But if it was one of the big three, we wouldn't care whether it was public or not. Because that's about the Aveira itself. But then the Gemara is saying after that, then there's something which doesn't relate to the Aveira specifically. But the very fact that there's a public rebellion against the Torah, that also is a horrible yab. But if there's a public rebellion, that bothers us, and that we have to do everything to avoid. Wasn't Esther a public rebellion? No, she wasn't, because the public doesn't perceive her as doing anything. That's basically the simplest way to say it. So to hear, the Avnezer would say that, and he does say, that there's no publicity that comes from saying, oh, we're all going to read the Megillah on Purim, because we don't know that we all read the Megillah. Only the Beis Medrash guys know that. What the public knows is we all hear the Megillah on Purim. So therefore, Pirsum Hanetz is only from here. So that's all in the context of Megillah. Rabbi Willig, in his Sefer Am Mordechai, has a piece on Hanukkah where he doesn't quote this Avnezer, but he uses a very similar approach to explain the Hanukkah distinction, if there is one. Just asked him this morning in the base measures that I assume that you need the Avnezer to fully understand your piece there. And he confirmed that was the case. He said in the Sefer he couldn't present it that way because Hanukkah is before Purim. So Hanukkah, he didn't talk about the whole Avnezer, but indeed you need it to understand, or it's the same kind of word he uses to explain the Hanukkah piece. So now you know, if you want to read the piece of Hanukkah and you're wondering how to understand it, so now you have the background of this Avnezer. So he says that when it comes to Hanukkah, if you think there is a distinction within the mitzvah of Hanukkah, the point is that if you want to say there is a mitzvah of Ner Yishuv Beiso, right, we're basically saying that everyone is a part of the mitzvah, but one person is doing it on behalf of everyone else. So there's no Pirsum Hanes in that. Because everyone else's role is not visible. And it basically says, when it comes to Ner Hanukkah, there really are two components. There is the lighting of the candle, and there is the seeing of the candle. And the seeing of the candle, we know from the Gemara that that's actually a crucial part. Because the Gemara says that if somebody sees a Hanukkah candle, and isn't otherwise going to be lighting his own Hanukkah candle, this is the only exposure he's going to get, then he makes a bracha on that too, the same bracha that Sher Kedushonu he makes on seeing the Hanukkah candle. It's called the Berachas Haroeh. So really, that reflects the fact that by Hanukkah, there is a mitzvah to light the candle and a mitzvah to see the candle. And we usually do them together. But it's all two parts of one mitzvah. So let's say if you have Ner Yishuv Beiso, right? One candle in the household. So you can have however many people in the house. One person is lighting. But they're all fulfilling it through that one person. And they're all seeing the Hanukkah candle. So he wants to suggest that the piersum has to only be on the seeing part. Because that's the part that everyone actually does themselves. The lighting part, only one person does, So somebody who doesn't understand or love this would think, okay, only one person has to light the candle. They don't chap that they're lighting on behalf of every individual in the house. So therefore, he wants to suggest that the pirsum has to only be seeing the Hanukkah candle, not lighting it on behalf of the household. That's how he draws the distinction. Interesting?
Perfect time of distinction, I guess.
Yeah, that basically there's two parts of the mitzvah, seeing the Hanukkah candle and lighting it on behalf of the household. So seeing is the only one that the public would perceive that everyone does. Because the fact that only one person in the family lights the candles, if it's only Neri Shabeso, lights the candle, so then the average person is not going to see that any other family member has a role there. Al Pilongus, every family member does have a role. But the average person is not going to recognize that, and therefore that can't be a part of the Pirsum Hanes. So if we're saying, Afen Hoyub Oso Hanes, so the Pirsum only comes from seeing the candles. Also a Harifus. Just mention one or two more Harifuses. So there is, just to mention this very quickly, again, these are all very speculative, but just an interesting approach. So there are some who suggest that maybe we should break up Ner Chanukah into two parts and say that it has to do with two different miracles that were associated with Chanukah, or maybe more than that. You could say, for example, as some Svarim say, that the two core mitzvos of Hanukkah are the Hatzalah from the Mochama and the Nes of the Pach HaShemen. So maybe we should say, Afen Hayu Ba'oso HaNes. What does that refer to?
The first
one. Probably the first one. Second one? It depends. That gets also into a whole lundus. So who benefited from the mitzvah of the Pach HaShem? The Kohen, the Beis HaMikdash. So there's a whole discussion in Svarim that maybe this should relate to whose candle was it. So do we say if the candles came from the Machzis HaShekel, so then do we say, do women take for the Machzis HaShekel or not? And there's a whole discussion that the Rebbe Kiva Eger and the Tzlach had, that maybe women should be Keturos from Musaf, because the Korban Musaf came from the Machzis HaShekel. Also a whole lumdus. So maybe you can get into that whole discussion. Is the Pach HaShemen also something that was relevant to women? And maybe that creates a distinction.
But if you said that the Kohanim were Shlichan, or Shlichan Shmai, concept is, so then it wouldn't even be for us.
Shluchei Drachman.
Right,
maybe. Yeah, but so the mitzvah of Ner Menorah, the mitzvah of the Menorah in the Beis HaMikdash, whose mitzvah is it? So is that Klal Yisrael's, or is it whoever pays for it? It's a little bit of a lumdus. Are you, do you have a stomach for one more lumdus point, or is it overload? Alright, so I'll mention one more. That there's also, first, one less lumdusha, but not so politically correct point. So there is a question, okay, now that we've accepted the women are chayavos, so the fact is, we don't find that women actually light. Let's say, for example, the second, we have three levels of lighting, right? We have Ner Yishebeso, and we have Ner L'kol Echad V'Echad, and then we have the Mahadran, which is per night. So the minig has developed that women don't do the second level. Right? So if it's Ner Yishebeso, the first level, so the halacha l'maisa, anyone can light that candle. So the husband can light, the wife can light. Doesn't matter. Schefter once mentioned that he once gave a shir somewhere, and they had a strange conversation with somebody beforehand who told him that he considers himself to be completely observant. He happens also to be married to a non-Jewish woman. But it's no problem. They work it out very well, and they have a whole setup in their house. Everything's fine. She goes shopping on Shabbos. He shouldn't have to see her whole Shabbos. Everything's great. He's totally observant, and he's married to a non-Jewish woman. So I was like, okay. And then he went to give the shir, and the shiur was about Hanukkah, and he mentioned that if you're not home for, and there's Hanukkah, so your wife can light for you. But then he realized this guy's been through that too. So he said, that's assuming that your wife is Jewish. If your wife is a Jewish, and then people started laughing, and they thought he was joking, but he was serious. This guy was going to assume that it applies to him also. So if your wife is Jewish, so it doesn't matter, either one can light the Arish Beso. And as far as the third level, Mahadran, that's about knights, it's not about people. But as far as the second level, so the second level, what do we do for the second level? We do per person, right? What does it mean to do per person? So according to the Rambam, per person means the Baal Habas lights as many candles as there are people in the household. So then, that's everybody, the men, the women, the children, everybody. But if you take the Ramah's version, that means to light your own menorah. So the minig is that women don't light their own menorah. Or meaning in some circles, women don't light their own menorah. So why not? So the Chassam Sofer has a statement, the Chassam Sofer writes, that he thinks this has to do with Kol Peluda Bas Melech Penima. That back in the day, when they used to light outside, so then the women didn't take on the custom of lighting outside because they were called Peluda Bas Melech Penima. And then even later on, when the lighting was all inside, so that stuck and women don't light their own menorahs even inside either. Now again, if she's married, so then it's each to Pagufo, that's the reason. But for the single women, he thought that that was a possible explanation. Hi.
What exactly is that reason?
They used to light outside, right? So if the idea was called Kvud Devas Melech Panima, so when everyone was light, also keep in mind that there was a very specific time in the Gemara when this happened, it's a very specific minute. So everyone was gathering outside in the courtyard, the outside courtyard, it's Machlokas also, whether it was inside courtyard or outside courtyard. So then the minig of the women was not to go out among that whole chevra and light them. So that's it. Again, not everyone accepts this explanation. That's the Chassam Sofer's explanation. There's a lot of debate about whether that's true or not, or whether that's a logical explanation. But I saw in one Sefer had a very creative approach to this whole issue. And he wants to say that there are three different levels of miracles that we are thanking for on Purim, on Hanukkah. One is being saved from destruction. That's the first level, Ner Yishu Beso. The third level is the Pach Hashanah. And he assumes, unlike what we said a minute ago, that that applies to women too. They were also part of the Pach Hashanah. So Ner Yishu Beso, that applies to everyone being saved from destruction. Pach Hashanah for Mahadran and counting nights, that applies to everyone also. But what about the middle? So what does the middle correspond to? So the middle, he thinks, if you say like the Rambam, that the middle means that the Baal Habayis lights on behalf of everyone in the family. So basically that's a hiddur on the first concept, that we're grateful that we were saved. And we get more specific about it by counting the people in our household for whom we are grateful to have been saved. So then, okay, the Rambam says you'll count for everybody, men, women, children, the whole story. But according to the Ramah, it's a different hiddur, right? According to the Ramah, the hiddur is that everyone lights their own menorah. What's that about? How does that accomplish anything? So he thinks that refers to another miracle. That we know that there's another sakana. So there was, on the one hand, getting killed, that was the first thing. On the third hand, the Pach Hashanah. But in the middle, we also find that the Yavanim tried to stop us from doing certain mitzvos, like Milo. So that, it sounds like from the sources, that that was only relevant to mitzvos that men were doing. And they point out, because when we talk about what the sakana was, usually for women we find this reference, for example, about the married women and the like, but you don't find reference to mitzvos that they were doing. So he suggests, this is going to say for Ner Yisrael, makes the suggestion, that that idea of being saved from being stopped from doing certain mitzvahs, that we honor by going out of our way to do a mitzvah personally instead of relying on the household, so that component maybe didn't apply to women. And that's why the second level of hiddur, of Ner L'Kol Echad V'Echad, women didn't develop a practice to take on. Very, very, again, very, very Lundish suggestion.
You say
it. Yeah, the basic of that, level three applies to everyone, right? So per night, everyone. Level one is about being saved from death. That applies to everyone too. So the question is level two, Ner L'Kol Echad V'Echad. So if you believe like the Rambam, that the Balabas lights candles per family members, so that also applies to everyone. It's a way, the message must be that thank you for saving us from death, and here are the people who we're thanking you for on their behalf. So that should include everyone. But if you say like the Ramah, that the idea is that you're counting that everyone does the mitzvah on their own instead of being yotzei with the household, what's the imagery there? Well, what's the imagery of having, instead of having a household menorah, having individual menorah? So he suggests that the imagery is that because we were stopped from doing certain mitzvos, like Mila, so now we want to show our hakara satov by going out of our way to do mitzvos on a personal level. So that sakana seemed to only include men. So therefore the idea that we're going to show a hider by lighting our own menorah, not just being satisfied with our household menorah, but lighting our own, that was an idea that only developed among the men because that's what it represents. So again, a charifus. Okay, so probably enough charifuses for today, but that, I think, does it for that topic for the most part, so probably we should wait till tomorrow to start the tuition topic, but again, we will start bright and early tomorrow the sugya of Amira and Kedusha, Nasa Huva Amrahi, and the like, and we'll take it from there.